Hi, Dave Emery here. Side 2 of For the Record program number 800. Meet the new bosses, same as the old bosses. Update on Ukraine. This program is being recorded on June 29th of the year 2014. In Side 1, we took a look at the continuity between the OUNB of World War II and the World War II era and the OUNB of today and how that has been maintained through organizations like the Republican Party of the U.S., the CIA, the BND, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, and parties like the Congress of Ukrainian Nationalists, who very craftily have expressed their support, anointment of Vladimir Yabotinsky, or Zev Yabotinsky, named Vladimir Yabotinsky, as a hero, this somehow negating their anti-Semitism, overlooking the fact that Vladimir Yabotinsky was a doctrinaire fascist. And in the Alexander Coburn article from the Village Voice of October of 1982, much of that information, that critical information, was contained in a letter from to the New York Times from Albert Einstein and Hannah Arendt, among others. We're going to be taking a look at a very important article from the German foreignpolicy.com newsletter of May 30th of 2014. It is ironically titled For Peace and Freedom, and it not only looks at the brutal military campaign being waged in the Russo-sympathetic eastern provinces of the Ukraine. It also takes a look at what will be taking place under the EU Association Agreement signed by Petro Poroshenko on the 100th anniversary of the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, to which the Western Ukraine used to belong. We're going to be taking a look at the grinding austerity, which is going to be implemented in the Ukraine, and how also German heavy industry is poised to move in and begin an economic colonization of the Ukraine. This story also notes that in addition to the brutal war being waged by the OUNB proxies in the eastern Ukraine, it talks about how German and EU hegemonic expansion in the former Yugoslavia was accomplished, and as we have noted in the past, through the use of World War II fascist entities that have been preserved into the present period, not only sort of neo-Ustashi organizations in Croatia, but the successors to the 14th and 21st Waffen-SS divisions and the Our Muslims combatants in places like Bosnia-Herzegovina and Kosovo. There are a number of programs which have links in the description for this that can fill you in on this. Again, from GermanForeignPolicy.com, which feeds along the lower front page of the SpitfireList.com website, this ironically titled story, For Peace and Freedom. German foreign policy experts are expressing their approval of Kiev's putsch regime's recent escalation of warfare against the east of Ukraine. It is, quote, evident, unquote, that Kiev had to again become active, declared the influential diplomat and chairman of the Munich Security Conference, Wolfgang Ischinger, I-S-C-H-I-N-G-E-R. Outgoing Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk, whose regime bears responsibility for the current artillery and aerial attacks on eastern Ukrainian cities, was guest speaker at yesterday's Charlemagne Prize award presentation ceremonies. The German media praised him accordingly. The Ukrainian president-elect, the oligarch Petro Poroshenko, would like to lead Kiev into a, quote, security alliance, unquote, with the West, and soon sign the economic segment of the EU's association agreement. Ukraine has already begun the necessary preparations, austerity measures which will massively increase the unemployment rate and entail a dramatic rise in prices, have been initiated. German business circles are preparing for their economic expansion into that country. If Kiev can take control over eastern Ukraine with military means, new conflicts could arise. The interests of the expanding German industry might collide with those of Ukrainian oligarchs. Kiev's Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk has attracted public attention with his participation in yesterday's award presentation ceremonies of the Charlemagne Prize to the President of the European Council, Herman Van Rompuy, R-O-M-P-U-Y. In his short speech, he declared that Kiev will fight, quote, for peace and freedom, unquote, against the rebellions in the east of the country, with all means at our disposal, unquote. On the eve of the ceremony, he conferred in Berlin with the German chancellor on the next steps in the struggle for influence with Moscow. President-elect Petro Poroshenko announced that Kiev seeks to strengthen its formal ties with the West. After initial resistance, Kiev now is signaling that the signing of the economic segment of the EU's association agreement is imminent, still scheduled for June. Parenthetically, it was just signed. Continuing. Only the political segment is currently in force. Poroshenko has also announced that he is counting on a, quote, new security alliance with the USA and Europe to also militarily protect the Ukraine. He intends to, quote, fight for this and immediately open talks, unquote. He has had intensive phone conversations, unquote, with Chancellor Merkel and is now hoping, quote, for more solidarity and support, unquote. Immediately following the putsch in late February, the Ukrainian putsch regime began initiating economic preparations for the country's transition into the Western hegemonic sphere. As usual in such cases, this process means the imposition of harsh austerity policies. An agreement has already been reached with the International Monetary Fund to apply its clearly defined austerity measures. Therefore, and listen to this, Kiev has abandoned the previous government's plans to slightly raise pensions and the minimum wage, approximately 45 cents an hour, and will now freeze both at current levels. The parliament already decided back in March to reduce the national budget by 17%. Altogether, about 24,000 civil service employees will be fired, accounting for 10% of all civil servants. In a letter of intent, unquote, to the IMF, dated April 22nd, Kiev has also agreed to increase before the summer the price of natural gas for private households by 56%, as well as the costs for district heating by 40%. Parenthetically, it gets really cold in the Ukraine in the wintertime. Continuing, this will be a heavy blow to a large portion of the Ukrainian population, whose average earnings when the oligarch's wealth is deducted are estimated at about 150 euros monthly. In 2015, gas and heating costs will be raised another 40%, and again in 2016 and 2017, another 20% each year. The war against the insurgents in the east of the country, which is consuming large sums, has not yet even been calculated into these plans. Minister of Finances Alexander Shlapak announced on May 10th that Kiev's military budget will probably have to be increased by 50% for the time being, and this amount is still not enough. Therefore, Ukraine must cut its budget for social issues and healthcare. In anticipation of the imminent signing of the economic segment of the EU's association agreement, the austerity policy has begun provoking tangible interest in German economic sectors. Quote, the adoption of EU standards and the establishment of a free trade zone with the European Union will demand a multiplicity of immense efforts in modernization for Ukrainian enterprises, unquote, according to, quote, Germany Trade and Invest, or GTAI. For example, the steel industry, which is, quote, very important to Ukraine, unquote, has, again, quoting, much catching up to do in the use of modern technology, unquote. German companies are hoping to land lucrative contracts. This sector also has political significance, as in many other branches. Ukrainian oligarchs such as Rinat Akhmatov, A-C-H-M-E-T-O-V, exercise an enormous amount of influence over the steel industry. It is unknown whether Akhmatov, who may have to make expensive modernization investments, can expect concessions for his announcement to regain control over eastern Ukraine. From within the entourage of President-elect Poroshenko, there is talk of a, quote, German aid program for the Donbass, unquote, that is supposed to, quote, create jobs, unquote. GTAI also sees opportunities for German enterprises in the impending modernization of Ukraine's agriculture, where Ukrainian oligarchs also are influential. According to the GTAI analysis, the imminent signing of the economic segment of the EU's association agreement will make large-scale transplantation of industrial sites also feasible. For example, a foreign automobile producer could proliferate its locations in the Ukraine and establish a cluster of subcontractors, unquote, writes the Foreign Trade Agency. The country could even, quote, step by step become a second Czech Republic, unquote, thanks to its exceptionally low wage level, which is expressed as, quote, labor cost advantages, unquote, particularly due to the fact that Ukraine has a, quote, relatively well-trained labor force, unquote. Again, I think the austerity policy and its real meaning for German heavy industry and also the automobile industry in particular is fairly clear here. You basically crush the economy and you've got a relatively sophisticated, well-trained labor force that is desperate and will work for low wages, which makes for high profits. Continuing here, GTAI points out that various automotive component suppliers, such as Leoni, are already producing inside Ukraine. However, Ukrainian auto manufacturers must, quote, then convert to the production of component parts or niche products such as customized autos or infrastructures, unquote. It is not clear what form the confrontation will take between the giants of the West European auto industry on the one hand and the Ukrainian oligarchs on the other. Note who's really big in the Ukrainian automobile industry. For example, one of the largest car manufacturers in Ukraine is privately owned by the billionaire, parenthetically new president, Petro Poroshenko. Poroshenko has announced his intentions to sell his companies, with the exception of his Channel 5 broadcasting company, but it is not clear who will take over his Bodan Corporation car factories. Whereas the protege of the CDU-affiliated Konrad Adenauer Foundation, Kiev's future mayor, former boxer Vitali Klitschko, has announced that he will now, quote, seek German investment very intensively, unquote. His political ally Petro Poroshenko is applying the final measures for the absorption of all of Ukraine into the Western hegemonic sphere by repressing militarily revolts in the east of the country. This week, using its newly formed National Guard, parenthetically composed of Pravi Sektor and Svoboda in large measure, as we have seen in the past, irregular militias and the Air Force, Kiev's regime massively expanded attacks on the cities of Donbass. Before elections, quote, they had shied away from fighting not to endanger voting, unquote. An insider was quoted saying, quote, now we can finally retaliate, unquote. German foreign policy experts are expressing their comprehension and sympathy. Quote, it was evident that Kiev had to again become active once the elections were over, declared the chair of the Munich Security Conference, Wolfgang Ischinger. From Donetsk, D-O-N-E-Z-K, the first strikes in opposition to Kiev's onslaught have been announced, and violence is also escalating from the side of the insurgents. No end to the fighting is in sight. The war beginning in eastern Ukraine will not be the first war to accompany the German-European eastward expansion of their hegemonic sphere. Already in the 1990s, Germany supported the destruction of Yugoslavia to prevent possible resistance to its predominance. In the summer of 1999, shortly after the war over Kosovo, German media had referred to a, quote, war of European unification, unquote. However, at the time, it was reported that leaders, unquote, were referring to this, quote, only in confidential conversations, unquote. Otherwise, one would have to answer the objection that, quote, war is again being called the mother of all, even Europe, unquote. A Deseret News article also takes up the issue of what austerity may do to Ukraine. I will also note here, before we get to that, one of the things that is being proposed is a wall separating Russia from Ukraine, sort of a Berlin Wall in Ukraine, which is more than a little ironic. This is from Reuters.com of June 17th of 2014. As Ukraine mulls security, some say build a wall with Russia, by Timothy Heritage. Billionaire businessman Ihor Kolomoisky has suggested building a wall along the almost 2,000-kilometer land border with Russia to prevent fighters and weapons flooding in, skipping down. We can take on this project from start to finish, said Alexei Burik, B-U-R-I-K, deputy head of the Dnipropetrovsk region, where Kolomoisky is the governor, offering to lead the construction work, skipping down again. Kolomoisky, a 51-year-old banking, media, energy, and metallurgy magnate with a fortune estimated by Forbes magazine at $1.8 billion, has presented his plan to Poroshenko and reckons the wall can be built in about 6 months. Skipping down again. Whether or not it's Kolomoisky's project, a wall to be built to defend Ukraine from Russia's aggression, said Ivan Stoichko, a parliamentary deputy from the Baltikovishchina party, led by former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko. Pavlo Ryzhenenko, a deputy from the Udar party of former boxing champion Vitali Klitschko, said, quote, I don't think Poroshenko has a monopoly on this idea. It is something that should have been done long ago. And again, the irony here is Hitlerian. This is, of course, like the Berlin Wall, except this time it's a good thing because it's going to keep the Russians out of the Ukraine. From the Deseret News, out of Nevada, of June 1st of 2014, an article by Mark Weisbrot. And again, this deals with the implications of austerity for Ukraine. Insistence on austerity could derail Ukraine's chance of survival. And it reads in part as follows, skipping down. Which brings us to today. The new government of the Chocolate King Poroshenko is committed to those same conditions now spelled out in an IMF agreement released at the end of April 1st. I would not want to be in his shoes. After 2 years of almost no economic growth, the IMF is now projecting a steep recession for this year, with the economy shrinking by 5%. This is largely because of budget tightening that the government has committed to, amounting to about 3% of gross domestic product over the next 2 years. For comparisons, think of the U.S. government cutting $500 billion, roughly the equivalent of the Pentagon's annual base allocation from its budget over 2 years. The economy is supposed to recover next year, but we've heard that before. Think of Greece or Spain or Eurozone austerity generally over the past 4 years. And noting Russian concerns about Ukraine joining NATO, skipping down. NATO added 12 countries from Eastern Europe between 1999 and 2009, parenthetically in violation of the agreement for the reunification of Germany. It remains to be seen what exactly austerity does to the Ukraine. An educated guess would be that it will increase sentiment for fascism and for extremist parties. I suspect in the East it will accelerate sort of centripetal forces looking to dissociate themselves from Kiev. I would expect an increase in repression for those areas. It also will make people desperate for work, which will benefit German industry because Ukraine's relatively well-trained labor force will become disposable, will be placed at the disposal of German heavy industry. again, noting the Hitlerian reversal of facts. What we're going to conclude our broadcast with is another very important article from GermanForeignPolicy.com. This from June 23rd of the year 2014. It's titled Energy as a Weapon, Part 2. And it deals with the U.S. and the EU policy towards energy and fracking and natural gas in particular. This is aimed not only at freeing Western Europe from dependence on Russian natural gas, but on driving down the price of natural gas and destabilizing the Russian economy and President Putin's regime. Direct interference in the affairs of a sovereign and still quite powerful country. The article reads, the first part, as always with GermanForeignPolicy.com, is a summation of the article. In the view of the EU summit meeting later this week, the fracking lobby and NATO are intensifying their pressure for the EU to initiate the highly controversial hydraulic fracturing. There are indications that the German Bundestag could speed up legislation allowing this dangerous gas production technique. The outgoing NATO General Secretary Anders Fogh Rasmussen is implying that fracking opponents are in fact working as agents for the Russian government. This incredible slander coincides with global transatlantic strategies aimed at using the current fracking boom in the USA and other Western countries to significantly weaken or even eliminate Russia's influence as a producer of natural gas. If Moscow can no longer sell its gas to the EU, it could hardly avoid painful budget cuts. This would have serious consequences for Putin's position of power at home and his influence in global politics. Regardless of such campaigns, German and U.S. energy companies are pressing ahead with fracking in Europe while continuing to do business with Russia. These new moves favoring fracking are taking place in the run-up to the EU summit, which it begins in Brussels later this week. This summit will also discuss ways the EU could reduce its, quote, energy dependence, unquote. At present, 39% of the EU's gas imports originate in Russia. On May 28th, the European Commission presented an in-depth study of European energy security as a basis for the current debate. The study proposes, inter alia, the diversification of energy supplies, enhanced energy-saving measures, as well as the development of the internal energy infrastructure of the EU to provide the possibility for operating the flow of the pipelines in both directions. This will allow countries which had been mainly or even exclusively dependent on supplies from Russia to receive supplies from Western countries as well. The EU strategy paper also mentions, quote, the increase of indigenous energy sources, unquote, explicitly shale gas produced by the risky and highly controversial hydraulic fracturing or fracking. Current exploration efforts have been, quote, hampered, unquote, not least of all by lack of public acceptance, notes the paper. Environmental organizations and citizens' initiatives in numerous countries are mobilizing against fracking, in Germany as well. Nevertheless, energy companies have already begun exploring fracking possibilities in Germany. BASF subsidiary Wintershall, for example, W-I-N-T-E-R-S-H-A-L-L, obtained a relevant concession in North Rhine-Westphalia. The German-Canadian Central European Petroleum, unquote, claims to have discovered through exploratory fracking oil reserves of around 5 million tons in Mecklenburg, Western Pomerania. Its value is estimated at more than 3 billion euros. The fracking lobby is thus intensifying its pressure. According to press reports, the German Minister of the Economy, Sigmar Gabriel, G-A-B-R-I-E-L, will permit hydraulic fracturing, quote, under certain conditions, unquote, and is therefore preparing changes to regulations concerning the assessment of environmental sustainability of mining projects, unquote, which will soon be presented in the Cabinet and the Bundestag, skipping down. The EU is allocating a triple-digit million sum for the relevant research. Beginning again, the EU is allocating a triple-digit million sum for the relevant research. Skipping down again. The fracking lobby considers the current situation very favorable for reaching its objectives because the EU and the USA are reacting to the conflict with Russia by calling for a significant reduction in European dependence on Russian energy sources. Western foreign policy strategists see an opportunity to weaken or largely eliminate Russia's influence as a natural gas producer. This has to be seen in the context of the U.S. fracking boom, which has made the country the world's largest gas producer, even ahead of Russia. Skipping down again. If the EU could be supplied with more liquid natural gas and U.S. shale gas, and if the EU could enhance its own supply through fracking, Russia could be hard hit, unquote. According to the U.S. magazine Foreign Affairs, 50% of Russia's budget is derived from its sales of resources. By the way, I would note that Foreign Affairs is very close to the Council on Foreign Relations, which has very strong inroads into the U.S. national security establishment and the corporate elite. Continuing. A drop in prices and sales would force Russia to make painful budget reductions. Again, quoting, Russian President Vladimir Putin's influence could diminish, creating new openings for his political opponents at home and making Moscow look weak abroad, unquote. Russia's position in global politics would be seriously endangered. With this in mind, NATO circles have now openly begun interfering in energy policy. Last week, outgoing NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen, R-A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, personally intervened to block resistance to fracking, claiming that environmental organizations are supported by Moscow in their struggle against hydraulic fracturing, quote, to maintain European dependence on imported Russian gas, unquote. Fracking opponents have become instruments of Russia's sophisticated information and disinformation operation, he said. Industrial circles confirmed that this accusation has been raised for some time. The organizations concerned, such as Greenpeace, which had been at odds with Moscow for quite some time, have reacted to this allegation with ridicule and mockery. However, this does demonstrate that the Western political establishment is not averse to slandering political opponents with insinuations that they are working as agents for its global political adversary. So again, if you happen to be one of those agents of Russian influence who doesn't like fracking, shame on you, you sissies out there. I mean, just because you don't want your water supply polluted, you don't want some earthquakes. I mean, my goodness, what subversive activities you are engaged in. Obviously, agents of Russian influence. One of the things that I have noted is that since the crisis in Ukraine began, the U.S. and the West have jumped back to Cold War mode. I mean, it really is surreal. You don't get tarred with the commie brush anymore, but you get tarred with the Russie brush now, and things really haven't changed all that damn much. This concludes our broadcast. Meet the new bosses. Same as the old bosses. Update on Ukraine. This is being recorded on June 29th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.